This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for Wednesday, November 30th. I'm Angela Denning. The world's oceans are becoming more acidic, and like climate change, it's happening at a faster rate in the far north waters of Alaska. A workshop being held in Anchorage today aims to bring together scientists and stakeholders to better understand the threat ocean acidification poses to the state. As KCAW's Emily Russell reports, the workshop is being streamed in 9 other communities, including Sitka.
Not only are the world's oceans about 30% more acidic today than they were 300 years ago, the rate at which they're acidifying is faster than any other time on record.
So more carbon in the air getting absorbed by seawater makes it more acidic.
That's Chris Whitehead. He's the Environmental Program Manager for the Sitka Tribe of Alaska. The tribe has been testing toxins in shellfish for years, but soon it will start testing the water for levels of acidity. Whitehead says ocean acidification poses a particular threat to the bottom of the food chain.
Like if you're a little tiny clam or a pteropod, which is little tiny plankton that form really delicate shells, your shell can't form.
That's because the more acidic ocean water is, the more corrosive it is. That worries people like Hannah Heimbuch. She's planning on attending the Ocean Acidification Workshop.
A lot of my questions are around the food web and predator-prey dynamics.
Heimbuch lives in Homer, where she fishes commercially.
Yeah, there's so many unanswered questions about how this will affect the ecology of the marine environment, and I'm really curious, as a salmon fisherman, I would like to know how it will affect, you know, what the fish I catch eat.
Along with catching fish, Heimbuch also works for the Alaska Marine Conservation Council as a community fisheries organizer. She's been focused recently on ocean acidification, trying to inform people about the effects it may have on Alaska's waters.
And one of the ways that we have been doing that is by working with the Alaska Ocean Observing System, AUS, on the Alaska Ocean Acidification Network.
It's that network that organized the workshop on the state of the science of ocean acidification. There will be remarks from researchers and policymakers, panel discussions with scientists from around the state, and presentations on lessons learned from the Pacific Northwest. The workshop is free online and will stream directly to some of the state's major fishing communities like Unalaska, Kodiak, and Sitka. Hannah Heimbuch says, for them, ocean acidification poses a direct threat to their local economies.
Folks that are based in coastal Alaska understand that we need to take that long-term view and really try to better understand these big picture changes happening out in the ocean.
Because, Heimbuch says, at the current rate of ocean acidification, it won't be long before those changes will be felt on shore. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Emily Russell.
In Sitka, a remote viewing of the workshop is being held at the Island Institute from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. today. You can find a link to stream the workshop online on our website, kvsk.org. It's posted along with this story. Residents of the Southeast Alaska community of Whale Pass should be getting their ballots in the mail right before Christmas to decide on forming a new city. The former logging camp and community of around 50 people is voting on whether to incorporate a new second-class city encompassing about 26 square miles of land and water on northern Prince of Wales Island. Joe Vicknicki reports.
Back in August, Alaska's local boundary commission decided that a petition from Whale Pass residents met state standards, and they agreed to send the issue to a vote. If residents approve this winter, Whale Pass would become the 116th second-class city in Alaska, not the smallest in terms of population and about average for the size of its boundaries. The state's Division of Elections is conducting the vote by mail. Election day is January 3rd, and people have until that day to complete their ballot and return it in the mail or drop it off in a collection box at the home of Don and Sharon Hillis in Whale Pass. Sharon Hillis says she'll be mailing in those collected ballots.
If people want to drop their the ballots that they get in the mail, they can drop them off here. Or if they've had them sent to some place or they didn't receive it, they can do an absentee in-person ballot here, and it will also be sent in that way.
Hillis says there has been some talk in the community about the issue, with some people for and some against forming a new city, but she hasn't seen any real campaigning about the vote. Supporters of incorporation say it will help the community plan for the future and help pay for repairs and maintenance for the roads, dock, and buildings in the community. a nonprofit community association with the board of directors, currently provides some basic services on a volunteer basis. Some residents have opposed incorporation, saying the decision can wait, while others say they enjoy the freedom of living in the part of the state that has no organized municipal government. Hillis says that anyone who is registered to vote in Whale Pass by early September will be getting a ballot.
And on that voter list, there are people who haven't lived here for a long time. There are people who moved recently to another state. But as long as they haven't registered to vote in another state, then they are still qualified to vote in our election.
Election Program Manager Brian Jackson with the State Division of Elections says around 80 registered voters will be getting ballots in the mail, and they're expected to go in the mail by around December 12th. Depending on the mail, ballots should be getting to Whale Pass within about a week of that time. The community relies on small plane service for supplies and mail, and it's also connected to the Prince of Wales Island road system, but still a long drive from some of the larger towns on the island. Because of the timing of the election, Hillis recommends voters get their ballots turned in as soon as they can.
Voting this time of year means that we could have inclement weather and the planes won't fly. We normally get our mail twice a week, Tuesdays and Saturdays. And we went almost 2 weeks during the last election with nothing in or out. My husband finally made a trip to Craig, which is a two-hour drive, to mail the ballots that we had to get them out.
The ballot has just one question. Shall Whale Pass be incorporated as a second-class city? Voters will also choose from eight candidates for a new seven-person city council that will govern the new municipality if voters approve incorporation. Unofficial election results should be available on January 3rd, with a vote certified sometime around the 19th of January. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicknicki.
And the eight candidates are Frank Bamberg, Craig Cook, Lori DeSaro, Darielle Donaldson, Josiah and Michael Hustis, Robert Meyer, and William Pattison. The candidates have to file financial disclosure forms with the Alaska Public Offices Commission, although voters there could decide to remove that requirement in a future election. The Petersburg Public Library has seen a 20% increase in checkouts over the last fiscal year. Between July 1st of 2015 and June 30th of 2016, over 100,000 items were checked out. That's more than any previous year. I spoke with Borough Librarian Tara Alcock about the jump in interest.
Checkouts increased 20% if you look just at what was checked out of our local holdings, but if you looked to what was brought in from other libraries, it went up 30%.
So still for the local content, what's available here locally at the library, that went up 20% this year?
That went up 20% this year, yeah.
Any ideas why?
That's actually a great question. We actually see, and if you look at our long-term circulation statistics.
Okay, you're showing me a graph here for people who can't see it.
And so this is our 15-year trend. So you can see that we've had every year we have some sort of an increase. And where you see that flat line here, we were closed for a couple of weeks for the move. And so, you know, that the year that we were in our biggest transition, which was moving into the new facility, we didn't have the circulation that we normally do, the increases. But we have been on an increase of circulation.
It kind of looks like a steady increase, but then the last couple of years, a pretty dramatic increase.
I wanted to really show the board the difference between just use of our collection and then use of that broader collection. If you look at the use of the broader collection, you see a real spike. We had a kind of transition in this past year where we joined what's called the Joint Library Consortium, or the JLC, so we're part of this larger network of libraries, public and academic, in the state of Alaska, and so we really saw that had an impact on our circulation too. It seems like local people are really using that and pulling in books from other places and DVDs to check out from our library, so that includes those checkouts.
So that just expands what's available for people to check out.
Yeah.
And the nuts and bolts of the Joint Library Consortium, the JLC, that's through the mail system, right? So somebody can check it out here and it may just take how long to get?
It really depends. It can be very fast, sometimes just a couple of days and sometimes a couple of weeks if that item another library is checked out or goes missing, then it adds time. But we see things show up within a week for the most part.
Yeah.
And I think people are, local folks are becoming more adept at using the online system too, more and more used to it. And then, so a lot of those are coming in from people who are sitting at home, see something on television or the hear something on the radio, think, oh, I like that book. And then they just go online to our website, log in, place the hold, and then it shows up here within a week.
How much does that cost the library to be part of that system?
Our annual costs to be part of the consortium are $3,000 a year. It's significantly less than what we were paying as a standalone facility. And, you know, we send things out to other libraries, but we, you know, as you can see, we reap the rewards of being part of that larger system. So we not only save money, but we have a vastly increased value, I think, from being part of it.
How long have you been with the Petersburg Library?
I should know the date I was hired, but I think it was in 2002.
So a long time, 14 years. Yeah. I mean, almost the length of this 15-year graph that you've been showing me. What are your thoughts on just the steady increase in interest in the library from the local residents?
You know, I think we've changed the role that we play in the community over this stretch of time that we're looking at. We've really gone from being perhaps more of a repository of books to being a place where people come, they see their neighbors, they chat, they go to a program, they read a magazine. We see just a lot more social use of the library than probably we did before. And so people don't generally just come and check out. They come and use us for wireless internet. If they don't have computer at home, to use the computers. We just have a lot wider array of services, I think, than we maybe did 15, 20 years ago.
And that was Tara Alcock. She is the borough librarian. She is one of two full-time staff at the library. There are several part-time workers and volunteers who also help out. Tonight, Alcock will be giving a report to the library board. That meeting is at 6:30 p.m. at the library, and it is open to the public. Ketchikan City Council agreed unanimously this month to support an application for a state grant to develop a sobering center at Ketchikan's former state-run juvenile detention center. The state recently shut the center down in response to budget cuts, and the facility reverted to the city of Ketchikan. The city asked for proposals from community groups interested in using the building, and the Substance Abuse Counseling and Mental Health Service Company, Aquila Gateway, was the only one that submitted. Joel Jackson of Aquila says the community very much needs a place where people under the influence of alcohol or drugs can safely sleep it off and then be steered toward treatment, which Aquila offers in a separate facility. He says the grant and the building are two opportunities that aligned at just the right time.
So we have a facility that's zoned correctly, that's available, and we had a grant proposal that came out 2nd of November, allowing us to ask for money to help provide a service that meets or fits into our continuum of care.
The state grant would provide $1 million a year for 3 years. Jackson says the state will announce the award in early January, and the recipient would have until July to start providing services. He says there are some minor revisions that would need to happen at the facility. Part of the motion that the council approved states that the building would be provided to Aquila at no cost for the three-year grant period. Some Ketchikan council members wanted to make sure that the city of Ketchikan wouldn't be on the hook for major maintenance costs during that time, as long as the building is in good condition at the start of the three-year lease. Ketchikan City Manager Carl Amelon says if Aquila is successful in obtaining the grant, a detailed lease agreement will come back to the council for review and approval. Well, this wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. I'm Angela Denning. Thanks for listening.